Okay, thank you for those. Right, I shall make a start then. Today's topic is about getting more love and joy into your life. I think we could all do with that, however much love and joy we've got in life, can't we? So, those of you that sat in this morning, I will cover some similar things, but obviously with a different emphasis. And the reason I need to cover similar things is because our brains work in a certain way. And without understanding that background of why it works, then you can't latch onto the rest of it. So I particularly chose this because I feel that people, everybody wants more love and joy in their life, or wants some love and joy in their life. Some people have none, believe it or not. And it's about that I live a very loving and joyous life, whether or not things happen to me. So it's not about your circumstances, because we all go through highs and lows of life. And in fact, if you don't have the highs and lows of life, you actually don't know anything about life, because you measure one thing by the other. And if you've had a real low in your life, then almost anything seems like a high anyway. And if you've had nothing go wrong in your life, then the highs are only slightly above that. And anything that disturbs our wonderful life, we think is a terrible deep depression. So even though some people's lives only move about like that, in fact, they think they're swinging up and down like that. And other people have the most horrendous things happen to them, but also can have the joy at the other side of it. It's a bit like a sugar rush, really, that we have this thing where we suddenly fancy a bit of sugar and then we eat it, and then we have this sugar rush, but the sugar rush only lasts so long, and then it not just doesn't drop us down back to where we was before, it actually crashes, and we go through the other side of it, and then we need another sugar rush, or a cigarette, or anything that you're addicted to is the same thing. I help people stop smoking as well as doing all this. But I don't do it very often. Just the watch. people come to me and say, but it relieves the stress. That cigarette relieves the stress. In fact, it doesn't. The previous cigarette set up the stress. Right? So when you have a cigarette, or you have if you're addicted to wine, you have the drink of wine, you get this sort of nice feeling for a short while. You get the crash through it. You get the need to replace that thing that you're addicted to, the cigarette or the wine or whatever. And when you get that need, obviously then when you have that cigarette or that wine or whatever, you go, and you feel better than you did. So I have a lot of people who want to stop smoking, and then they sort of like, something happens, somebody dies, something very traumatic, they go back to smoking. Because the association is, well, that relieves me. It doesn't. It doesn't. When you have the new cigarette that you haven't had for years, it doesn't relieve you from anything. It sets up the new trigger reaction that carries on. And in life, we have this thing where we learn lots of lessons about life all the time. But we're all born with a certain blend of perception. It's almost like we're born with these sort of tinted glasses on. And they can be rose-tinted, or they can be sort of frosted over with grey. So I've got twin grandchildren, a boy and a girl. And they're as different as chalk and cheese. Their star signs must be the same, because they're born within minutes of each other. But one was sort of clingy to mum, and the other one was totally independent from the moment he was born. So we are born with this sort of expectation of life and how it works. We also have where we're born and how we're brought up and everything else impacts on us, because we're seeing the lessons from that particular environment, which has to have an impact on us, the social impact. If we're brought up within a certain religion or a group of people or even a different country, then that impacts on how we are. But our perception overall is the biggest factor, because everything we perceive, we believe to be real. So if we have a belief that everybody loves us, then we are confident and outgoing and everything else. And everything that we see that agrees with that, we register it and say, well, I am confident and everybody loves me. If, on the other hand, we believe that nobody loves us and we're underconfident, we don't go looking for the confident bits, because if somebody tells us we're lovely and really nice, we go, no, I'm not. No, I hate myself. And after a while, they stop telling you. So now all you ever see is the bits that you want to see that actually fit in with what you think about yourself. You start to notice it and notice it and notice it, and you go, yes, it is that nobody loves me. So although I'm talking about love and joy, I'm going to get the bad bits out of the way first. So I saw a woman on a regular basis. We became friends. Originally she came for a weight loss program. But she had horrendous problems. And she was, I wanted to say claustrophobic, no, not kleptomaniac either. What is it when you keep taking medicine you don't need to? What's that? Hypochondriac. She was a hypochondriac. And within 20 minutes of chatting to her, the first time I spoke to her, I got rid of that. It just went. Because I'd worked out how she was processing things, and that went. But overall, there's always something in the background that sort of keeps us clinging to not being joyous and happy and everything else. We're always looking for what will make us happy. We've already got it there, but we don't know it. We keep searching. You know, there's tales of people going all around the world to gurus and everything else, and then they get back to their little flat, and then they realise that it's there anyway. Okay, there's even a film about it. What was it? Eat, Pray, Love or something? So we have this overall perception of how we are, and we hammer things to fit. We make it fit us, and because that's all we see, we actually don't take the other things on board. And so we become more of whatever we are. So if we're happy and joyous and courageous and confident, we become more of that. And if we're shy and retreated, we become more shy and retreated as we get older. It doesn't get better. And that's because it's an unconscious program that's running, and you're not correcting it. And I'll show you how much it works that you don't see things that are absolutely visible, right? Because it doesn't fit in with how your brain works. I'm going to prove this with my wallet. Okay. You won't have heard this story before because it's absolutely unique to me. Anybody tell me anything different about that wallet? Got a yellow sticker in it. You probably can't read it from there, but it says, I love you, and it's got three crosses. Okay? That yellow sticker was put in by my girlfriend on Monday morning, about 3 weeks ago. I'd just gone down, I stayed at her house the weekend, and I got up early in the morning to try and get through Lincoln before the traffic started. So I'm up at about 7, go to get in the car, found out I'd been robbed. Right, somebody's broken into the car, they've took about £200 worth of stuff, luckily caused no damage. And the way I am is I quickly get into the logical bit of, it's happened now, what am I going to do about it? So I was on the phone to the police, organised that, organised if I needed to stay there and get it fingerprinted or if there's anything I can leave behind and so on. So within 10 minutes I've phoned people, I've done all I can, what else can I do? You know, I've lost £200. Tough. And most of it was in the glove compartment, which I'd tidied up the week before, so I knew exactly what was in there. So I sat in the passenger seat. This is relevant to the story. I sat in the passenger seat on this little Scotch blanket thing I got, looked in the glove compartment, all these bits missing, made a list of it, told the police, reported it, drove off to the Mercedes garage, because I've got a smart car. Had the locking nuts replaced, because they'd stolen those. They'd stolen some sunglasses, which were in a big, bulky case. And got all these things sorted out. So I literally lost £50 that I had to pay out for. There was £30 in the glove compartment, so I'm £80 down, plus these very expensive sunglasses and a few other bits and bobs. So that was on a Monday morning. Little known to me, Trudy, my girlfriend, had put that love note in my wallet that morning on the basis that when I got home, you know, still distraught from the robbery, I would open it up and go, oh, isn't that lovely, and feel better. So nice thought. I carried on all that week. I replaced my wheel nuts, spent 50 quid out of my wallet. She had seen me open my wallet a few minutes after she'd put the note in and not seen it. So she was a bit puzzled by this, but she thought, well, he'll see it when he gets home. A week later, right, so this happened on the Monday morning. On the Saturday afternoon, we went to an event like this. Trudy often assists me. And because she assists me and doesn't ask for pay, I actually buy everything. So tea, coffee, and meals and things like that, because I won't have her paying out of pocket to help me. So my wallet came out several times that day, and she notices this thing still in there. She's now going, well, he's had it a bloody week, and he's not even said, ah, or thank you. So what's going, you know, it's like, we've been going out together for 10 months. She's thinking, it's wearing off, isn't it? So later on the Saturday, I opened my wallet, but this time I opened it in such a way that my thumb touched that yellow post-it note. It went from invisible to visible in a split second. So as I did that and went, oh, that's nice, and she saw me and I said, oh, it's lovely, when did you put that in there? And she said, last Monday. I went, oh my God. Now, at first it preyed on my mind of sort of like, how could I possibly not have seen that? I mean, it's a bright yellow note, I mean, for goodness sake. But then I twigged how it worked. I put a similar note in her laptop computer about 3 months ago. It's a black one, and it's in that corner. And when I'd phoned the police up, I'd been over her computer, I'd opened my wallet up, this opened over the bottom corner of her computer. The unconscious had gone. You can ignore that. That's that note you wrote to Trudy. As soon as it had done that, it then made that invisible to me. So for a whole week, I did that hundreds of times and never saw that note. And that is the power of your unconscious mind. So once it's latched on to something, once it's learned a lesson from something, it goes, that's the rule. That's how life works. But sometimes we get the wrong rule. So we have something that makes us anxious in the past or whatever. And the thing about getting love and joy into your life is, we always think, well, we'll get it soon. I need to get that new job. Or when I move to that house, or when I get that car, or when I can afford 2 weeks holiday a year, or 4 weeks holiday a year, or whatever, I'll be happy. Well, I don't know what your beliefs are about other lives, but I can tell you one thing, you only get this one once. Right? You might get other lives, depending on what you think, right? But you only get this one once. And the trouble is, if we keep waiting for something to happen, we have a point which is called birth. We have a point called death. We all have those, right? Nobody's ever escaped this planet yet. Well, there might be a few that died in space, but everybody's born and then they die. All we have is the journey in between, right? So if we're talking about destinations all the time, destination is death. We only have the journey. We don't have the destination. Right? Because then we do what we do. Start a new life or finish. Depending on what your thoughts are. We only ever live in the moment. And even your past at that time was lived in the moment. And in the moment, things should affect us. We should have joy in the moment. Or compassion, or anger, or feel terrible about things that have just